You're listening to The Record on KUOW Seattle. I'm Bill Radke. Thanks for tuning in.
America, the country, is as divided as it has been in 150 years since the Civil War.
I think that we are almost in like a civil war at this point.
I don't think we're that far from a civil war in this country right now.
Tucker Carlson, Van Jones, and Rush Limbaugh saying the U.S. seems on the brink of civil war. Well, we certainly seem polarized. A Gallup poll found 77% of Americans think the country is greatly divided. We've seen protests turn violent from Ferguson to Charlottesville. Hate groups are on the rise. But does all of that mean the country could go to war with itself again? Well, let's ask two Civil War experts. Judy Giesberg is a Civil War historian at Villanova University, and David Blight is a professor of history at Yale. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
First, David, you have said it's not inconceivable that a small civil war, small c, small w, or something like it could happen now. What do you mean by that?
Well, a democracy is always capable of civil conflict because we are a democracy. And sometimes republics, if we look back through a few centuries of history, republics have sometimes been more violent than autocracies because dissenting sides are free to dissent, and sometimes dissent can become violent. I don't think we're on the brink of a shooting civil war of a kind, anything like what we remember as the American Civil War, where large armies divide, where it's rooted in the secession of a whole region of the country. Our civil conflict now is limited, it's local, it's ideological, it's racial, it's generational, it's class, and it plays out in a million different kinds of local ways, and then it plays out, too, in what's happened to our Congress, which is so seemingly profoundly dysfunctional.
Well, then, David, you're describing divisiveness, polarization, and being dysfunctional. But when you say that a civil war or something like it, are you talking about, do you see violence, like escalated violence in the near future, or not that even?
No, I would not. Historians should never predict, because we don't know what's going to happen necessarily any better than anyone else. And we've gotten so many things wrong, like the end of the Cold War and 9/11 and all the rest. The big fear, I would say, for people to watch for and to look for, is when we do have electoral results, let's say political results, election results, that are truly unacceptable to a large portion of people, to a party, to a group, if we begin to see electoral results that people will not accept, will not live with, then we are probably on the brink of some kind of division, disunion of some kind. Whether that leads to war is a whole other question. But I do think what we should be watching is what is happening to the party system, to the way we organize our politics, which means including holding elections. At what point might we see an election result that just too many people know was rigged, or that they are convinced that a large portion of voters were suppressed, simply wasn't fair. If we reach that point, then we have the risk of disunion. Whether that leads to violence remains to be seen.
Okay, and there's a lot more to say about parties, the party system and its health and rigged elections. Judy Giesberg, Villanova, first, what's your take on this question of whether the U.S. is, as you heard some commentators saying, could be on the brink of some kind of civil war or conflict?
I don't think so, and I have to agree with David. I always like to say that historians like to be the last to know. We don't do predictions, and none of us is comfortable with predictions, and I think we all try to steer clear from them. But I also don't agree that with those commentators that we're on the brink of a civil war. But I think a more interesting question, and one that I talk a lot about with my own students, is that there were a lot of questions that arose in the aftermath of our Civil War. And we never definitively resolved those questions. And I see a lot of of the division politically that we and socially that we're experiencing now as a result of that. I think, you know, historically speaking, civil wars can take a really, really long time for countries to emerge from. And it's not entirely clear on some occasions whether or not we really have effectively emerged from our one civil war with a clear sense of the federal government's role in protecting the civil rights of its citizens. And I think there's a lot to be said about sort of, you know, thinking carefully about the lessons that we learned in the aftermath of that civil war and thinking about what our political system should be doing and the problems that it could be more effectively solving today.
Well, I do want to talk about how we might solve some of those problems today. While I have Civil War experts on, I'd like to learn a little bit for just a moment about the lead up to the American Civil War. Did it?
Sure.
It came after a divisive presidential
yep.
election. Is
sure.
are there important parallels there or not?
Well, I think the thing to keep in mind is that, you know, we sort of think that the outcome of the presidential election in 1860, you know, elicited this immediate and spontaneous response that was secession. But really, this was, you know, years and years in the making, and the arguments behind secession were rehearsed decades before it actually occurred, and there was great thought put into it. You know, people like you know, John C. Calhoun had been, and others had been sort of thinking about this and building the foundations for this argument for years and years, and there was coordination, and there was, you know, there was anticipation all built into that moment. So yes, the outcome of the 1860 election was contested, and some would say that, you know, that the way it was run was unfair. But the response was anything but spontaneous. It was really quite orchestrated. So in that regard, you know, I when I look around today, and I think yes, we, you know, we're emerging from an election whose outcome was contested, but I don't see the sort of coordinated and anticipation and that sort of preparation that went into that moment that occurred in 1860 and then continued into 1861.
Can I just add one thing on that? Mm-hmm. Judy's right. You know, the 1860 division was years and years in the making. The one big difference is that you had a new party, a new political movement, the Republicans, that was born directly out of the slavery crisis, the expansion of slavery in particular, and it is the most successful, the most rapidly successful third party or new party movement in all of American history. And there is our model to kind of look back at. Do we have a politics now that would in some way divide us, break up the normal political system, the party system, to such an extent that it would create some kind of new coalition? And that's what it would have to be, a new coalition that then would win power and sufficiently frighten its opposition that might lead to some kind of breakup of the union in some form.
Well, David,
that's not
David,
easy
what's your,
to imagine,
yeah.
but that's probably what would have to occur.
Well, what's your answer today? Because we sure know the two major parties, especially the Republicans, do have splits in them. How
oh,
do
they
you?
Do.
So
yeah, they
so
do indeed.
Yeah. How much does that worry you or not?
Well, it worries me a bit, but I'll tell you what worries me more is that we have a massive divide over many things, but right now, as we speak, let's take the tax bill. We have a massive divide between those who believe in government and those who don't. The current modern Republican Party really does not believe in governing. The only thing they are able to pass or have ever been truly interested in passing are tax breaks and tax cuts. They don't believe in many of the things that our taxes are supposed to actually do for us. On the other side, you've got a divided Democratic Party, too. It's got all kinds of factions, and it's almost always, by definition, a little bit at war with itself. But by and large, Democrats believe in a social contract. They actually believe in government or governing. They believe government owes people something and people owe government something. That division in our society is as old as this country, and it was in part what secession was about, not exclusively. Secession was ultimately about slavery, but it was also about those who believe in government and those who don't.
David,
now, if this deepens any further in our society now, we could have a crisis that leads to some kind of at least political breakup, if not worse.
David Blight, history professor, Yale University. Judy Giesberg's a Civil War historian at Villanova. Judy, how important is President Trump's public hostility to the media?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about how much I wish he knew something about history, you know, because it's been...
We should give him a sabbatical and a two-month seminar. You know?
That would be great. Yeah, that would be great. I mean, I think we could all get back to doing what we want to do is teach our students and talk about other stuff with our students. You know, I think, I guess like every other American, I'm concerned about, the attacks on the media and what that means for, you know, Americans feeling about who they can trust and what are the news sources that they can trust. You know, I don't see, this in my lifetime, certainly this is unprecedented, but I also sort of, as a historian, look for those moments in the past as well. I mean, I don't think we've always had a very politicized press, and that's certainly not something new to this time. But to have, I think what concerns me more about this president is just how the sort of very, very narrow sources of his information, that he really doesn't want any information that contradicts or that challenges what he's intended to do. And that worries me more than anything, that just sort of, the fact that he really only trusts one or two news sources. And I would, and like most Americans, I would question whether or not they should be called news sources. So that kind of thing, that bothers me a lot, right? I mean, who is he getting his information from? And the kind of power he can wield with having these this really negative relationship with what I think is, you know, our reliable and respectable information sources of information.
You know, my next guest is a historian of how credible or incredible the American media have been. So we're going to have that conversation in just a moment. Before we go, I want to ask a question you raised. You talked about learning lessons and healing division. What would unify the country today from your point of view?
Well, you know,
David, you might have to go first while she thinks about it for a while. It's
you know,
a tough
I think,
one.
I think we, you know, I was thinking about that. I mean, you know, throughout history, the moments when we've been most unified is when we faced a common enemy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think these are not things you would anticipate or look forward to, but I suppose, right, if we identified, and I do think, you know, I do like to think that in some ways Americans are, you know, a good number of Americans who were divided before this election have, you know, see those divisions as less consequential now than a big division between, you know, what America stands for and what this current administration is trying to affect. So I think we, you know, if people see this current administration as going down a road that is entirely un-American, that really is not, you know, that really doesn't serve the purposes of this country, I think, you know, that potentially that can unify certain factions of society. I think it is. I'm heartened to see the kind of political energy that has reigned in the last few months since Trump came into office, and I like to think that might be hope for the future.
What about you, David? Hope
enemy
for the future?
In war. I'm sorry. A common enemy in war is clearly those times we've been most unified,
right,
even after 9/11. However, so does common suffering, and this we might think about at least. You know, the New Deal legislation, the great social network that came out of the New Deal, came out of the Depression, Social Security, the Wagner Act, and on and on and on and on. The idea of a social contract was born of enormous suffering. Now, I don't want this to happen, but if this current tax bill and current policies of the current leadership of Congress succeed in rolling back health care, rolling back voting rights, rolling back access to student loans, rolling back access to graduate school, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it could lead to a coalition of strange bedfellows who are all beneficiaries of that social contract, but don't like each other politically for a few other reasons. It may have to do with race or gay rights or guns or something else. So it's hard to say, and we are often creatures of how we react to events more than we even are of our ideologies.
Creatures of how we react. Judy, do you see hope in anything else beyond suffering?
Yeah, well, I do, and I think because I want to, right? I do think there is a growing chorus of voices that are opposed to the way in which this administration is seeking to dismantle so much of what I would say makes, you know, our civil society what it is today. I like to think that, you know, that even those right who thought they saw something positive about voting the way they did last November, that more and more of them have to begin to see, you know, without something, this sort of experience of common suffering, I like to think that at some point they'll wake up to this as well, and they'll join this chorus of voices of opposition.
We'll find out together. Judy Giesberg, Civil War historian at Villanova University. David Blight, history professor at Yale University.
Can't tell you about my hope. Huh?
What's that?
I just wanted to say I still have hope in something too, but you know,
yeah.
I have hope in the natural rights tradition and the Bill of Rights. Our creeds are fine. We just have to live up to them.
Yeah, we do.
Keep the creeds and start acting on them. That's the tough part. Thanks to you both. Yeah. Good talking with you about this.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And in fact, we're tweeting out a link to a couple of articles that explored the same question. Is America on the brink of civil war? The New Yorker discussed this. Foreign Policy Magazine discussed this with the guest you've just heard, among others. So we're tweeting out a link to that right now, at KUOW. And as promised, we're going to talk about how reliable the American press has actually been over our history. So stay tuned for that.